This is Ozarks at Large. One of the most important but least witnessed procedural events in this country is an oral argument in front of the United States Supreme Court. While audio recordings of the arguments are made, video recordings are not allowed. Research at the University of Arkansas reveals a bit more about the oral argument process. Two members of the political science faculty, Patrick Stewart and Bill Schreckheis, joined then Honors College undergraduate student Chris Kimmel in an examination of the oral arguments of 11 controversial cases. Chris Kimmel says conventional wisdom is that the arguments are exercises in which lawyers try to convince justices, justices who have come to the bench with open minds, to their side of an issue. But he says research suggests something else is happening.
Oftentimes, the justices come into the arguments already having made up their mind largely, and use the interruptions and the questions that they ask to try to own the conversation and to try to push the argument one way or another, and to try to convince the other justices to come down on their side. And we found that basically almost all the time across every single justice, they interrupted more times in the case that they were, or during the argument of the side they were going to rule against. They wound up interrupting more times and using a lot more statements. They didn't ask as many questions to probe for answers. They just gave statements of what they thought. During the 11 cases that we studied, for instance, Chief Justice Roberts and Justice Sotomayor, every single case, they interrupted more times during the argument of the side that they wound up ruling against.
It's really interesting. And so it didn't matter ideologically what direction justices were coming from if they were more likely to interrupt on something they're against, whether they were coming from what we would consider the left or the right.
Yeah, Antonin Scalia interrupted a lot. He's sort of known as sort of like the great interrupter, but and he's definitely identified as somebody who is, you know, on one of the ideological poles of the court on the conservative side. And we found that his the difference between who he interrupted, you know, whether it was the side that he wound up voting for or against, wasn't that great. But then other justices that were far less ideological, you didn't see that happening. In fact, I ran some additional analyses that weren't included in the paper and just could not find any relationship at all, which is surprising.
There's a diagram breaking it down, and it looks like the justice who is most likely to interrupt when disagreeing is Chief Justice Roberts. The ratio between interruption for agreeing and disagreeing is vast. This is interesting because it's very few people who know what the conversation is behind the closed doors. The nine justices, maybe some clerks, I don't know. But this guy gives us some insight a little bit to the thinking process that we wouldn't otherwise have.
I think you're exactly right. Yeah, in fact, when it comes to conferences, nobody is allowed into that room except for the justices themselves.
Just the nine.
So we know very little of what goes on. We know a little bit about what goes on after that because we have access to some of the former justices' papers, and we can see drafts of opinion, and we can see them writing things like take this out, or I'll write a dissent, or we need to clear this up, or whatever. But I think this is a pretty clear indication of what the process is more broadly, because it shows that, yeah, it looks like a lot of the justices come to the bench with their minds made up. Maybe what happens during oral arguments could possibly sway a justice here and there who just really has no idea. But at the end of the day, it doesn't seem to make that much of a difference. And what could make a lot more difference is what happens after that as well.
I guess you went through transcripts. There are recordings of the arguments in front of the bench. You listened and read. Is that part of the research?
We went through, through 11 different cases, and because there's obviously no video recording allowed in the court itself, so we listened to the audio recording and followed along with the transcript to pick through it all.
Yeah, and following on that, if we were able to do more of have the video recording, that would tell us an awful lot more. I'm more of a guy that looks at the nonverbals as far as the body language, facial displays and the like there, and so that would give us even more insight as to what's going on. As it stands, the only way you can get that is if you go to the Supreme Court and actually watch them in action, but you can't videotape them. They don't allow that, and that's been a big problem and a big issue.
I'm wondering if attorneys or journalists who cover the court could use this information to kind of make, I mean, again, you know, justices' past histories with decisions, and you can, you know, a lot of people who don't cover the Supreme Court can kind of make guesses, though you do get surprises. But I'm wondering if journalists who cover it or lawyers can get a better gauge of where this decision is going to be a few months from now after the oral arguments.
That's our hope, is that the, you know, the individuals who are watching, the court watchers, the serious court watchers, will be able to open that black box a little bit more. It's the most elite of institutions by design, and it's become even more elite by the nature of the individuals who end up on the court itself. So opening it up for the rest of America, which has become extremely diverse, to this very elite end, it's educationally not that diverse a body, is important for me at least.
Yeah, I would also add, too, from a litigant's perspective, from an attorney's perspective, I think a lot of times what the public doesn't know, and perhaps even attorneys who wind up practicing before the court don't know, is how frequently the interruptions are. And I've often told my students when I talk about oral arguments, when you listen to oral arguments, when you come as an attorney, you have this beautiful, well-crafted, well-laid-out argument, and you open your mouth and you get maybe two sentences out, and then boom, you ask a question. Then you ask another question. And one of the things that really surprised me was when we actually tabulated them after Chris counted them all, that the average number of interruptions per side per case was about 140 interruptions, which is a lot, which means if you are an attorney practicing, you are going to be spending a lot of time having to answer questions or deal with the interruption if it's a statement. And from an attorney's perspective, there might be some interruptions that are worth more than others. If you have somebody that you're pretty sure isn't going to vote with you, or if you're pretty sure is going to vote with you, answer the question and move on. If there's somebody in the middle, then you might want to spend a little more time trying to drive that point home.
You probably had to complete this research before the Affordable Care Act was argued. It would be interesting now, because that was kind of a surprise to many, it'd be interesting to go back and see if Justice Roberts interrupted often or not as often, given that he tends to interrupt more often when he's against something.
Oh, yes, indeed. And that's certainly something that can be looked at. And yeah, maybe Chris will look at that. Maybe there is a honor student out there that we can convince to do the analysis and go a little bit more fine-honed in their analysis there, because there's not just the interruptions, but also the other parapsychological sort of things that might tell us more information about what's going on.
I can't imagine how intimidating it is just to be arguing in front of the Supreme Court, especially if it's your first time, let alone be 5 or 10 seconds into an argument or a response only to be interrupted. That's got to be one of the most intimidating things that can happen.
Well, the architecture of the Supreme Court is designed in such a way is to intimidate anybody who walks in there. It's modeled after the Temple of Delphi in Greece. And in, you know, Temple of Delphi, you'd go to ask the great god the question, and you'd be given an answer. It's just so litigants, when they go before the court, are asking the great gods to rule in their favor, perhaps. So it's designed that way. It's designed just to be a little off-putting.
But the great gods would answer almost immediately, right? They wouldn't wait months. They would give you the answer before you left.
And it was usually unanimous, too.
Yes, yes. I'm curious, have any of the three of you seen an argument in front of the Supreme Court?
No. I've certainly been to the Supreme Court building multiple times and seen it, but it's my area of expertise goes more towards political debates, so it's not as keen for me.
It's on my to-do list. Chris, you were there last year, weren't you?
I was there about a year. This year ago, I watched a case that I can't remember the name of the case off the top of my head, but it was actually one of the lawyers that was arguing was from the Justice Department, and he was one that argued a case that I studied as well. So it's interesting to see him actually in action after I had just listened to the recording. But I saw one about a year ago.
What was it like?
It was very interesting, and you could see how intimidating it could be. As Bill said, the visuals are striking. When you're standing up there alone in front of 9 of the most brilliant people in the world, and they are literally judging you, and you have a lot to answer for. You have a lot of tough questions and a lot of very probing questions that they are more than willing and more than ready to ask. So it's very, it would be extremely intimidating to be standing up there.
The research for the article of Closed Minds and Open Mouths, Indicators of Supreme Court Justice Vote During the 2009 and 2010 Sessions, was conducted by Chris Kimmel while he was an Honors College undergraduate student at the University of Arkansas, along with two members of the U of A political science faculty, Bill Schreckeis and Patrick Stewart. Our conversation was recorded Friday afternoon inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. You can hear more from that interview in an audio extra at our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.
You send your child off to war, and they join a new family. When they return home, how does that affect yours? I'm Jackie Leiden. From the front lines to the home front, when your child returns from war. Plus our weekly read of the opinion page. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.